Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe period Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.
Hi everyone, Alex here with a quick update from another hotel room. Firstly, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who's already offered their help and support. We were completely overwhelmed. Thankfully though, we are more or less okay. We bought some 10-foot poles and have been whacking goblins with gusto. So, today's episode is another metacast, but normal shows should be resuming from next week. Even better, it looks like the Magnus Archives should still be releasing in February. Thanks for bearing with us, and we look forward to everything getting back on track from here. So we hope you enjoy the episode, whilst we see a man about an automatic goblin mashing machine.
Welcome to a special Metacast episode with me, Alex Newell, and with me today I've got...
Bryn Monroe.
Lydia Nicholas.
Ben Meredith.
And today we're discussing the arcane in Pathfinder.
Playing and we've sacrificed James in a ritual to achieve greater levels of magic power.
I thought we were going to sacrifice the Poseidon.
No, well, that seems to be your favourite.
Why don't we clarify that today and then we can make sure where that line is. That'd be really useful.
I'm here as someone that knows nothing about magic in this game or outside of, and so I can ask the stupid questions.
You're here to ask the questions that other people would.
What is the arcane?
So, that is a good question.
That's amazing that you asked that despite not having seen the script that's in front of Alex.
I actually haven't. No.
There are two types of magic in Pathfinder, mm-hmm. in this game system that we're using. There's one which is arcane, mm-hmm. and one which is divine.
Right.
Okay, so arcane being obviously the one that Hamid's tied to, and yes. divine being the one that Zolf is tied to.
Yes.
In earlier versions of the similar game, D&D, mm-hmm. they used to be much more different.
Right.
They're actually there's much bigger overlap than there used to be in the more recent versions. Yeah. But traditionally speaking, at least, clerics have been much more associated with healing, mm-hmm. and divine magic is therefore associated with that. Arcane is, you know, much more associated with like elemental stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And mostly
fireball
now.
Fireball in the face kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'd say mostly now, what the major difference between the two is the source of where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm. And the flavour of it is still
very
different.
Yeah, the flavour's very much still.
And there are some things that that takes a lot of levels to get to in one school and then not many in the other.
Yeah.
I could do stuff that you won't be able to do for ages, but you can do stuff I won't be able to do
absolutely.
Like, or at all.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know?
Yeah. And so, I mean, the two major different sources for it. For the clerics, it's obviously a divine favour from a god. Which,
or a concept.
Or, yeah, you can get some more obscure ones, which are...
I like the idea that there is, you know, the concept of iniquity.
the
or of capitalism. It's sort of sitting there and people are worshipping capitalism
giving, you know, oh, if I drown someone in money or if I mess around with the poor, I instill austerity on a country.
It's called Scrooge McDucking.
Right. See, and then they get all these favours of power.
So there's a couple of big differences mechanically. And before we head into a bit more, the things that people really notice off the bat are Arcane has an armor failure risk, a higher one.
Yes.
So clerics are fairly good at actually casting wearing armor. They're pretty friggin' tanky.
Yeah, and they tend to use big weapons and stuff.
Whereas the Arcane, you, by virtue of wearing it, it makes you kind of rubbishy at magic. So it's pushing you away from using armor. Mm-hmm. So you're more like glass cannon.
Obviously, in our campaign, we've got a cleric and a sorcerer. Arcane casters, the two major types, are sorcerers and wizards.
And so Hamid, if I understand rightly, thinks he's a wizard,
yes,
but is actually a sorcerer.
Yes. Now,
the flavour of this in-game is Hamid doesn't really understand the difference. And sorcerers in our game world are not very well known about.
Right. Not really. They're certainly a bit more obscure. They're not unheard of or anything, but it's not like, oh, you're slightly weird. We'll assume that that's what it is.
Yes.
It's way more out there as a concept. Because the difference between the two, to spell it out for people who've never heard of this, for wizards, they are what are called prepared casters. You can get prepared and they're alternates in clerics as well, but prepared means effectively at the start of a day, they have to prepare a list of spells, which are the spells that they have prepared that day. So even if he knows a spell that would be super useful, if he hasn't prepared it that day and he's a wizard, tough.
So
tough beans.
Zolf knows a huge long list of spells, and every day he prepares two of one of them and then one of three others, and then there's five spells he knows that he just can't cast that day.
Right.
Sure. Whereas with
ish.
Spontaneous, the idea is that you have access to a lot less, but you can pick and choose whatever you're using whenever you need it.
Right.
So it's rare for a sorcerer to get caught with nothing to use, but similarly, they won't have that really specialist perfect thing. The wizard will have the, I actually have sink boat made entirely of fingernails.
One day,
whereas the sorcerer, you know.
One day, Zolf will get to cast scurvy. One day. But unfortunately, the time that he really needs it will be the one day he didn't prepare it.
Almost certainly.
It'll be guaranteed. A whole lot of people where they're just sort of, so I can use my teeth to get to you.
So,
and he'll be, I have something for this. Darn! Maybe an animal made of teeth.
I think up to the point that our listening audience will have heard, Hamid only knows two level one spells, and those are the only two he casts, which are Charm Person, which has failed a lot, and Magic Missile, which has been amazing a lot.
Very useful.
Hamid can currently cast five first level spells per day. Mm. So he could cast five of one and none of the other. Mm-hmm. Or three and two, and he can choose when he casts it, which one he's casting.
So is Hamid preparing these spells at the beginning of the day, but he doesn't realise that he doesn't need to? So otherwise, how does he explain the fact that he's casting?
He doesn't realise that... So Hamid's backstory is he tried to study magic at university to become a wizard and just failed.
Yeah.
And now he suddenly can. He thinks that he's just super awesome.
It just took a while to filter through.
He doesn't realise that the reason he failed was because he wasn't working hard enough and wasn't preparing properly when he was at university.
But he
doesn't realise that that's a missing thing.
Right.
And a couple of other mechanics things worth mentioning is with the prepared ones, they tend to be int-based, so intelligence-based. And generally speaking, spontaneous ones who are kind of doing it, riffing on the fly, tend to be charisma-based.
Yeah.
Which tends to affect the way that those characters play out.
Yeah, and that's flavour as well. So wizards are people who've studied and learned, and they're very knowledge-based. And sorcerers are people to whom it just sort of happens, and they're not always entirely sure how or why.
And I haven't forgotten that I haven't mentioned the source of Arcana in this game. I will be discussing it towards later in the episode, but that's because that's going to be a kind of rambling discussion.
Yeah.
So I'd rather deal with that a bit later and get through the nitty-gritty first.
We won't say much more about divine casters today, I guess.
No, we'll be doing a completely separate...
Yeah, but just to say that clerics are not the only type of divine casters.
Sure.
There are also druids are very common. Paladins and rangers get divine spells.
Yeah.
I can't think of any spontaneous divine casters.
I don't know, maybe Oracle? So, with all of that in mind, there are also schools of magic. This is now heading more into the arcanary things and the clerics.
Yeah.
So, when Hamid's been doing detect magic, he did it on Barrett's Ring and things like that.
Yeah.
What he's actually doing is he's reading what magic went into making that or enchanting that or whatever. And I've mentioned schools before, but to go into a bit of specific detail, there are...
Eight
schools of magic.
That's a lot of schools of magic.
Okay, I'm going to go through these, so bear with it.
It's, right. And it's like, you know, you've got to think about this as, you know, magic is very much set up for universities. And so this is like, this is, it's like the different types of science. Yeah.
I always tie them like Terry Pratchett to colours and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like I always think of colour coding each of my different schools. It's, yeah. There's a way of filing them in my head.
And once a long time ago, you used to have schools that were opposed to each other, but I don't know if they still do that.
Yeah, they've really minimised that. Yeah. It used to be that it's like when you took, say, necromancy, for instance, you couldn't take anything that would do healing and things like that because they feel kind of opposed. They're a lot less on that in Pathfinder.
Yeah, I can't remember seeing
that. So now you can kill someone, bring them back to life, kill them, back. In fact, that's what they do in the dungeon.
And experiment on them in between.
So the schools are abjuration, which is... I'm going to massively oversimplify just to get through it all. It's buffing, really. It's making something stronger, better, faster, smarter, whatever.
Harder.
All of them.
Faster, harder, better, stronger.
That's it. That's abjuration. Okay.
Yep. I can totally hum Daft Punk.
Yep.
So, yeah. So conjuration, which is basically violating the conservation of matter and creating matter is a good way of describing it. Sometimes it can be creating a sword in your hand, but it can be creating more dynamic stuff like fires sometimes, depending. It's a bit...
Yeah.
It gets a bit muddy between the schools.
Yeah. The main two ones that you use for blasting stuff in a fight are conjuration and evocation.
That's the one.
And the line between the two is a little blurry, but...
I've tried to spell it out here. So you've got conjuration. I'll get to evocation in a sec. You've got divination, which is just information. It's what that word is derived from. It is just, you know, getting information, whether foreseeing it from the future, farsight, actually just battlefield knowledge. Yeah. There's enchantment, which actually, rather than it being enchanting an item, enchantment is mind-affecting normally. So if someone has a glamour to make them look all attractive... Yeah.
It's enchanting in the conversational use of the word. If somebody's enchanting, doesn't mean
they're exactly.
Enchanté, rather than... enchant that thing.
Yeah. Exactly. And then we get into evocation. So evocation is, like we were saying, there's a lot of overlap. The way that I tend to think of it is conjuration makes matter, tends to make things, whereas evocation tends to make energy.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
a good way of putting it. So conjuration
if
is...
If I say so myself.
Well, no, I've taken this from other people. I
was explained this to him at one point. He didn't know.
Yeah.
This was what I explained to him.
Bryn was the guy who helped me split it out. It's a really good way of putting it. And it
still blurs together occasionally.
But it's a really good way of splitting it.
Yeah. You want to make a rock, conjuration. You want force lightning, that's evocation.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got...
what's fireball?
I think it's evocation.
I believe it's evocation, Whereas if you were trying to summon something that had rocks in it, it starts to get a bit muddy.
I think fireball is because it's fleeting. You make it, it hits its target, and it goes away.
Yeah. And it's specifically...
You can't keep your
fireball. Yeah, and it specifically says, actually, with fireball, that there's no sort of lingering fires and things like that to really... pin it down.
Yeah. It's more like... I think fireball is more like a Dragon Ball Z Hadouken kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I'm sorry, nerds. But,
And then you've got illusion. Right. If you don't know what illusion is, I feel like you've got a lot of steps.
Read the dictionary, fool.
I feel like you've got a lot of steps to get through before this podcast is going to be worth listening to.
To be
for
fair,
you.
Not all the words mean what you think they mean.
Yeah.
Very
a lot of
true.
Them are false friends.
This
so
is what
words...
I'm saying. Is this one really does?
Okay.
Like real
illusion
straight down
exactly
the line.
Exactly what you would think it would be.
Illusion makes illusions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. Like, and that's all it does.
Not allusions. Not James is constantly playing illusion with his punning.
And then we've got necromancy or necromancy, which is
it's necromancy.
not
necromancy.
That's wizards who mostly deal with nichrome.
So I like necromancy.
So necromancy, it's death magic bringing things back to
magic
life,
Ian
killing them.
Who uses necromancy?
Hi, magic Ian. How are you doing?
This I have now. Ian has to be a caster that you meet.
Necromancy.
I'm Magic Ian. For those who haven't school of magic.
For those who haven't quite got the joke yet, write down Magic Ian, and you'll see what it actually spells.
There's no one that has the joke yet.
I think
fair
you are.
Enough.
And then last one is transmutation. It's basically converting stuff. So converting something from one thing to another thing.
Yeah.
Now we're going to go through something that has scared away a lot of people from playing casters, and it's because casting can be really complicated, and it's a pretty steep learning curve compared to the other classes.
I think one of the things we already talked
about. Try being a rogue.
rogue's really, really extensive, but once you've got the real core mechanics, it sort of riffs off that. Whereas
I think rogues are complex in creation, like all characters are, Casts as a complex whilst you're playing them.
There's a lot of admin and stuff like that. Yeah. So
I think they're deep, not broad. Like rogues are broad because when you level up, you're like, so many options. Whereas casters are like, oh, there's just loads of stuff.
What are the ramifications of this decision later on? And at level 10, if I didn't pick this spell at level 1, I can't. Oh.
Yeah, like we talked about, you know, preparing spells and stuff. Like Ben has to make a lot of choices. It, with his character as to what spells to prepare and things like
behind
that.
Behind the veil, I just pick the spell cards, which are here.
Yeah.
He's written out spell cards, which is more admin than I've done.
Yeah, I then looked at the character list and thought, I'm not writing out spell
like,
cards.
Like, one of the reasons I much prefer playing spontaneous casters than prepared casters
is
it's not having to make as many decisions and not having to keep track of all the admin.
And I know some people who've really loved playing magicians, not because they're powerful.
Magicians, sorry.
And it's because playing a Magician, there's loads of those decisions to make, and they really have to dig into it and figure out what are the right decisions to make. They'll choose to pick builds that can mitigate that, so they can swap out say one spell. That's a new addition.
It's an option they introduced into Pathfinder from the switch to D&D. As I recall, is that every caster now has the opportunity to switch spells out for stuff they can do spontaneously, because otherwise, for example, like. Essentially, for a cleric, most clerics, healing is the most useful thing you can do by a long way. Mm-hmm. And in the old system, clerics were incentivized heavily to just prepare nothing but healing spells. Mm-hmm. And so one of the most common options for clerics now is what's called spontaneous conversion, where they say, I prepared scurvy today. Instead, I'm going to use that scurvy spell to cast a heal spell.
Which is basically all I've ever done in the campaign. Is just convert my other spells
you
into
created water.
No, well, actually,
and
that's
platforms.
That's
don't
level
do
zero.
Yourself down, Ben.
No, it's a, no.
Small
that's not
floating
that's what,
platforms.
That's what clerics are great for. That's doing myself up. But anyway, this is
platforms
arcane, not the way.
And he tried scurvy on that thing, and then it turned out he didn't have bones. No, that got cut. But I mean, he tried it on a bone thing.
Yeah,
didn't work.
So anyway,
all the things you've done.
So to demystify and get rid of some of the scare. The thing that deterred me first time I was playing and defers a lot of people on their first game is when you see the first time you see a spell written out.
Oh, there's a lot to it.
Because it's so big. So we're going to break that down. It won't take long, but it is really worth doing. So going through in order, we'll take the example of Magic Missile.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a real core one.
We like Magic Missile.
It's a very good spell.
So first thing that you'll notice is school. We've already discussed that.
Can you tell people at this point where they could be looking if they want to play along at home?
www.d20pfsrd.com.
Yep. Magic Missile. Yeah, it actually is /magic/all spells/magic missile.
I just go to the site and then
the free legal SRD, which is basically a collection of all of the pages.
And then search Magic Missile. Magic Ian weapon. Yeah.
So,
got it.
So we're using Magic Ian weapon as an example. The school is evocation. We've already covered that, meaning that it's dealing with making something. You even had a better way of describing it. It's making a something transient, something fleeting. It happens, then it's done.
I win.
So then we have the descriptor.
Helping.
Now the descriptor is a bit of a tough one to explain, but it's sort of. What is the nature of the thing within that school? Okay, so for Magic Missile, it's force. You are projecting a force at someone.
It's not related to school. It's actually separate. It's mostly to do with how it interacts with the type of damage, and certain monsters can resist certain types of damage, and certain monsters are vulnerable to certain types of damage.
From a game balancing point of view, it's basically deciding what is resistant to this thing and what is not. I'm going to run through the list quickly. There's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Bear with it. Again, these are all just different types. It's just to do really with resistances and things like that. Acid, air, chaotic, cold, curse, darkness, death, disease, earth, electricity, emotion, evil, fear, fire, force, good, language dependent, lawful, light, mind affecting, pain, poison, shadow, sonic, and water. That's pretty much all of them.
Like, there are tons in... I don't know how this is in letter distribution, but there are tons in, like, A and B. And then I thought, oh, gosh, we're going to be here for ages. And then and water. Done.
It's not often that people use the zucchini descriptor. But when it comes up,
It's basically just a giant tagging system. So things can reference.
Very much.
And it's possible for casters to specialise in certain ones.
And it just gives you make you better at that tag,
Yes. So, for example, is this a plot spoiler if I...
I'd just avoid plot spoilers entirely if possible.
Well, I mean, we know Hammond is eventually going to turn into a dragon.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, that's
potentially.
What
we have. So
if any of us live that long.
Well, indeed. Part of that is actually that he doesn't know it yet, but he has an affinity for fire spells. So any spell with a fire tag...
going to get better and better.
Is going to be better for him than it would be for someone else.
Sure. So after that, we've got level. Really, really simple. What level is the spell?
Yes.
Not what level is your caster... Mm-hmm. What level is the spell?
And just in general, that's what level the caster gets access to it as well.
Normally.
But not always.
Yeah. After that, you've got casting time. That is how long it takes to make. Normally, it's a standard action. So for Magic Missile, it's a standard action, i.e. you could move and then cast that spell. Yeah. However, there are also, of course, swift, full round, multiple round, minutes, blah, blah, blah. So there are some things that last hours. It's just how long does that thing take to... make happen, not how long it lasts.
So if you want to summon an ice castle,
that's going to take you ages.
It takes the length of Let It Go.
So yeah, actually, it's a really good example. Yeah. There's one spell that our party was obsessed with in a previous game called Apocalypse from the Skies.
That's awesome.
It's exactly what it sounds, but takes a week to cast and you're not allowed to sleep during it. And there's a whole load of other things to do with it. And it's because it's the most insane, ridiculous, over-the-top spell.
Were you basically playing a kind of Cthulhu cult?
One of the characters was going that way, yes. He just went, I have a way to kill this massive monster that's terrorizing the village, okay? Apocalypse from the Skies. No! You can't save the village with a spell that has apocalypse in it. It doesn't work!
In one campaign I played in one system, one of the best spells was essentially you turn yourself into a nuclear bomb aimed at a single person. And you like... that if you cast it successfully, you utterly destroy that person and their spirit and everything about them.
Yeah.
And you leave a giant wasteland standing around where that person was when this spell happened. And you set every single one of your stats and abilities to one. And you basically have like a 50% chance of dying yourself. Yeah. When you cast
Once you get to the big end, you get really ridiculous ones.
I can't remember what it was called, but it was an amazing... like
probably going Nova or something.
Reading the entire length of this spell and being like, well, first all this terrible stuff happens to the person, and then all this terrible stuff happens to you.
It's a freaking amazing thing for if you're playing some kind of person with a long-standing grudge, where sort of sneaking up. Only purpose in life is to hunt this
there
person down.
There are some horrible ways you can pursue a grudge in Pathfinder. Yeah. Remember to go over them at some point. Really creative ones. Mm-hmm. So after that, we've got the components. What that means is what is required for you to cast that spell. Verbal, you have to say something. Mm-hmm. It always spells out, by the way, the verbal is audible. Like you have to do extra checks and things to make it, to do it on the fly. So normally it's, I am casting this spell, no one look at me. It's quite big.
Like being a sneaky arcane.
It's quite difficult.
There are ways to do it.
Yeah.
You can take a feat called Silent Spell, which allows you to cast spells without talking.
But that doesn't sound that hard.
It reduces your options, because that feat could be something else that's really useful.
But it also extends the casting time or the level of the spell.
It makes it a lot better. So, we'll actually get into it briefly.
I can't remember, yeah.
So after verbal, you got somatic, which means you have to do something physical. So that would be waving your hands. So for Magic Missile,
the limbo.
Yeah, for Magic Missile, let's say that you have to shimmy and do the limbo in order to cast Magic Missile.
That's so cool.
And the higher the Magic Missile, the lower you have to limbo. I don't know, but
is that actually how it works?
No. In theory, each spellcaster can create their own, because it doesn't determine.
You could be someone. So if you were like a burlesque dancer that suddenly found out that they had sorcery powers, you could do your extraordinary moves.
Breakdancing wizards.
You could indeed do that.
Breakdancing wizards.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, for Hamid, it's
breakdancing
magician.
Just want to recap: breakdancing wizards.
Potentially. For Hamid,
the people at home, for Hamid,
did Lydia just find her next character?
Yeah.
For Hamid, it tends to be relatively simple. You know, he flourishes a little, but it's mostly all, you know, in the hands and the wrists. And, ends with pointing.
So
missile that way.
I like the idea that he's sort of doing on this, like hands moving and these kind of really elegant things, and then
over there.
Click point.
On that to die.
After that, we've got material components. These are less of an issue than they used to be.
The stupidest rule in Pathfinder.
So this is where certain spells require you to have a thing, an actual physical thing, in order to cast a spell. And it was a way of keeping it balanced so that really high-level spells, like wish, which just allows you to change reality, mm-hmm. isn't something that you can just churn out again and again and again, because it has something specific. So you can't just go like, you see an enemy, I wish it away. You see a castle, I wish it away. Mm-hmm. It's very expensive and things like that.
I think one of the major resurrection spells used to require 50,000 GP worth of diamonds specifically.
Yeah that's stuff like that.
That's a 3.5 thing.
There are a few things, we've already mentioned this in other podcasts, where some classes get issue materials, mm-hmm. which means that they just don't have to pay the material components if they cost less than a certain amount. And there is also an item called the components bag or something.
Bag of common components.
Does exactly the same thing as that feat.
And basically, from game design terms, when you create things to specifically ignore a rule you put in, don't have that rule.
Yes. So basically, every single person who ever casts a low-level spell has some way to not worry about the fact that they might need a feather or...
Yeah. As far as I understand, the reason the rule is there is so that it doesn't seem weird that at higher levels you need this whole extra mechanic. Right. That was the logic behind it. I realise it doesn't play out that way.
That's the thing I'd say with high-level spells. Just give them extra mechanics, because they're so high-level. Yeah. It's like, you want to create a meteor, you've got to, I don't know, crush the earth.
There is actually a prestige class which is compatible with Pathfinder, which basically specialises in issuing materials, but at higher and higher levels. So it means that you're spending your feats on, I just don't need to buy that 50,000 of diamonds. But it's a very niche thing. I wouldn't recommend it. After that, you've got a focus, which is, it's a thing that you sort of use your magic through. It's as simple as that.
It's not common for spells to need one.
Not at all. And then there's the divine focus, which I'll mention here for the sake of it, because it appears in spells, which is normally the clerical version of that. It's a thing that you put the magic through.
For me, it's my Driftwood Dolphin, which is why I always mention it when I'm casting spells.
Right. After that, we've got duration for magic missile. It's instant, but those are how long the effects of the spell last rather than how long it took to make. So you've got time durations, 2 hours, 3 days, 15 minutes.
Permanent.
You've got instantaneous, which is what it sounds like. It has an instant effect and then it's gone. And you have concentration, which is you effectively...
For as long as the caster keeps concentrating.
And doesn't get distracted.
Yeah.
Just like channeling, basically.
Yeah.
So there's some really cool combat spells I like, where you summon a large sphere of fire or acid or electricity. And then whilst you concentrate on it, you can't cast any other spells, you can keep it just moving around the battlefield whilst you concentrate on it.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I could. Sometimes I'll just cast it and it'll roll over someone once. And sometimes I'll cast it and it'll keep rolling back and forth.
Yep.
And as long as I don't have to cast another spell, I can just keep that spell going.
Come up behind you and tickle you.
Yes.
That would work.
Mm. Well, I can make concentration checks.
Very true, which is basically a way
keep
of sustaining that. Yeah. After that, we've got saving throw, which has already come up a bunch of times in the podcast. Magic Missile, there isn't one, but there are saving throws. Negates means that if the enemy or whatever you're doing this magic against makes the will save or fort save or whatever, there's no effect. There's partial, which means shocker. There's a partial effect, so maybe half damage, something like that. There's half, which is very specifically half damage. There's none, which means that there is no way to protect against it. There are certain really high-level spells which effectively equate to, you die, there are no saves.
One of my favourite ones is a bunch of spells say, yes, there is a saving throw, and then have them back, it's harmless, reminding you that, yes, you can save
but
against this
spell.
But why
would you?
But you don't need to.
You can save against healing, I think.
Yeah.
It's a will check to save against healing.
But if you were necromantic,
if
you were a skeleton.
I once played a campaign where we almost healed to death one of the characters who was secretly casting like as an evil caster. And a new person joined the party. And we just forgot to tell... Genuinely, we just forgot to tell them. He gets taken down, and then the cleric, who comes over when he's on -5 health, goes, oh, it's okay, I've got this! And everyone goes, no! As he proceeds to almost, like, blast him away into oblivion.
Oh, no.
It happens.
The three types of save are the same ones that characters have access to, so...
Sure.
So, wait. So you're saying if you're evil, then you can't be healed?
Depending on what kind of character.
Oh, right. Clerics briefly, you can choose to, depending on your god or if they're neutral, you can choose to do positive or negative energy.
Right.
So negative energy heals undead, damages living. Positive energy heals living, damages undead.
And he was playing an undead character.
Right,
hence.
So he was a secret zombie.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he had like rotting bits that he was hiding.
He was wearing clothes to cover.
That's so cool!
It was a cool character.
If Sasha dies, then I'm trying that.
Secret zombie breakdancing wizard.
Yeah!
Yeah! Okay, and then last thing for the saves is disbelief. Which is genuinely... No, that seems a bit of a stretch. And then the effect just effectively stops.
What, so you're like, I cast a fire summon dragon rot. And I'm just like,
mostly it's against illusions, yeah. Unsurprisingly.
Yeah, yeah.
I disbelieve in this illusion.
So if I disbelieve and I'm like, that doesn't look like a real dragon. If you have actually summoned a dragon, it will just burn me.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's an illusionary dragon, it will...
One of the most interesting spell effects is something called Phantasmal Killer.
Oh, God.
You cast it at someone and they see... A killer coming towards their worst possible imagining. And they have to roll to disbelieve it.
Yeah.
And if they believe it, they die.
Right. They are frightened to death.
Because the worst conceivable thing that could happen to them effectively happens
and
to them.
And if they disbelieve it, they take a tiny bit of damage.
Someone needs to explain some of this stuff to Sasha in-game so she can just keep trying to disbelieve when people are casting actually damage. Just doesn't understand. They don't really use that much magic in Other London because they don't get to access universities.
They might
be occasional kind of sorcerer, but then they would disappear from Other London so quick. I don't know if there's the equivalent of like hedge magic,
where it's kind of like, oh well, so people can heal a little bit.
There are rogue talents which allow you to become a caster, but it is that kind of hedge magic stuff.
Yeah, that sort of little things.
Then after that, we've got resistance. Magic missile allows that.
Yeah, there's a special thing in the game called spell resistance, which just makes you immune to some magic.
It lets you resist spells. So a lot of some things you can have immunity to. And normally what it is to... If your spell's being resisted by a creature with spell resistance, you have to make a caster level check. So that's a d20 plus your level, your caster level, which is at least equal to the creature's spell resistance in order for it to affect. And it's to represent that the creature's so inherently magical and so on, or inherently resistant to it, it just doesn't even notice it.
Like, powerful dragons often have spell resistance because spells just bounce off them, essentially, a lot of the time.
I was made of this.
After that, we're into the simpler ones. Range. Mm-hmm. So for magic missile, it's 100 foot plus 10 foot per level.
Nice.
That's really huge. So these ranges are personal, which is it affects you. Touch, it affects something you touch. Close, 25 feet plus 5 per level. Medium, which is 100 feet plus 10 per level. Long, which is 400 feet plus 40. Unlimited. Or then you have like a really specific range. So like 17 feet for a couple of really weird ones.
Some of them are line of sight.
Yeah. So long tends to be things like big battlefield things. When there's something called a siege mage, which is you specialise in things that are massively long distance and hugely damaging, but you are rubbish at everything
else.
You're
walking trebuchet.
Yeah, exactly that.
If my breakdancing magic Ian, who's secretly a zombie, gets killed, then...
Walking trebuchet.
Just do that.
You've got so many characters out of this.
It's going to be cool.
After that, we've got target. For magic missile, it's up to 5 creatures within 15 feet of one another at the sort of higher end of it.
Yep.
But their other versions are Ray, which is a ranged touch attack. That's sort of like you shoot, think of it like almost like
when
a Star Trek phaser
my
or something.
Acid splash, that's what's happening. I'm actually having, essentially it's the same role as you throwing something.
Right.
Like I have to aim it well enough
it does
to hit them.
Yeah, it does almost exactly the same thing.
But because it only has to touch them, it doesn't have to like penetrate their armor.
Right.
Their AC against me
so
is lower.
So Hamid literally points at things and goes pew 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 and then they get hurt.
Yeah.
After that you've got Spread, which is, if I remember correctly, that's emanating.
Is it cone?
There's
from you.
Oh, I don't remember.
I can't remember.
These start to get quite complicated.
Yeah, you've got cylinder and you've got cone. On the battle map, it does say up for on the SRD how all of these play out.
Yeah.
But once you're doing 3D games where one of you's flying and you pass the cone at someone that you're flying past, who has also got a defensive cylinder, you start needing geometry.
Yep.
And lots of it and. It can get a bit ridiculous. Yeah. And then last but not least is the description or the effect of what happens. So for magic missile, it's unerring, so it can't miss. And it does 1d4 plus 1 damage per missile. And it just can be friggin' anything, really.
Yeah.
So I think we'll take a break there and we'll come back in a little bit and we'll discuss things in a bit of a looser kind of way.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Test, test. Elias, hopefully if you hear this, it means I've found a way to record those difficult statements I was telling you about. While I hate to speak ill of the dead, the previous archivist left this place in such a dreadful mess, and even an organization with such an unusual focus as the Magnus Institute needs a well-organized archive. As you know, I've been going through trying to digitize and record audio versions, but I've been having trouble with a few of the more bizarre statements. There have been sufficient distortions as to make them utterly unintelligible. Thankfully, though, I managed to unearth this old tape recorder from storage, and these cassettes, archaic as they may be, are still better than nothing. So with that in mind, I thought I'd take it for a spin, as it were. I've taken the shortest of the problem statements, and I'm trying it here. Frankly, I wouldn't normally bother with something so fragmented, but it should be fine as a test. Statement of Jacob, no second name given, regarding God knows what. Original statement given July 15th, 2011. Statement begins. It'll get you too. You can stare all you want, make your notes and your inquiries, but all your beholding will come to nothing. When the time arrives and all is darkness and butchery, you'll wish you had stopped listening and run. Statement ends. Yes, well, you see why I wouldn't have otherwise recorded it. Not exactly something for posterity, but nonetheless, let me know if you are able to hear that correctly, Elias. If so, I think we can begin transcribing the rest of the statements.
The Magnus Archives, a new weekly horror podcast by Rusty Quayle, coming soon.
And welcome back. So we've gone over the scary bits. The this is why I don't want to play a caster bit.
It was very complicated.
I get it, but honestly, once you can break through, it's in some ways it's easier because you don't need to learn all the flanking stuff and things like that. But the trade-off is be ready for paperwork. Yeah. Unless you're a spontaneous caster, and then it's just
pew, 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 you have to track a few things.
Yeah, I'm playing a divine caster, and they're a pretty light admin version of a prepared. Yeah. Mate, and I'm still struggling because I don't play this kind
well,
of
a lot of the problem with paperwork is stuff like when you're buffing someone else, they will always forget. So you're like, no, I've given you a plus one. But when you're doing that and you're a really good cleric, oh, you've given the entire party plus one strength, two to wisdom and three for attacks, but only against this thing, and you're having to remember all of this. Mm-hmm. It basically turns into a micro GM session, really.
So I'll kill Zolf before then.
That's the way, that's the way I deal with it. So we're going to blast through quickly the sort of some recommendations for playing arcane casters. So feats, items, things like that. And then I'm just going to open the floor to ask me questions about magic in this game world. Cool. And as long as it doesn't ruin the story, I will tell you.
Yay.
So, first things first, recommended feats. I always recommend people save some feats to get meta magic feats. Those are feats that modify your magic. So still spell that Bryn was mentioning earlier is one. Mm-hmm. Normally, they increase the level of the spell.
Yeah.
So it means that you can only cast worse spells in this specialized way. But there's things like silent spell, cast it without it. There's still spell, cast without doing a somatic. Mm-hmm. There's, you can get some really fun ones like time delay spell. Wow. So you can cast it, and then like five rounds later, it kicks in.
One of the best spells in the game is called one of the best feats in the game is called Quicken Spell.
Oh, I love
Which potentially Quicken. Allows you to cast two spells in one turn.
Cool.
It's amazing for your Magic Missile, which is like your level one that gets better. Yeah. You'd be like, oh, Quicken Magic Missile, and then a Fireball.
And you just do it again. And if you're a sorcerer, you do it again and again.
Meta magic interacts slightly weirdly with spontaneous casting.
True.
It's harder than for prepared casters.
But if you can make it work, then yeah, you can. You can do some really cool things.
Wait, I mean, maybe this was obvious from the beginning for most people, but so sorcerers don't run out of spells?
No, I can.
They can.
So if I cast five magic missiles, uh-huh. I can't cast any more until I've slept.
Because he's just used all of the spells at that level.
So you can do five spells for any spells?
Yeah, to have a look at a thing, it's the same for...
spells per day. Yeah, spells per day.
A certain level, and it's modified by your modifier. So for clerics, it's wisdom. For you, it's charisma.
Charisma,
so let's say Hamid will only know... Say, I'm plucking this out there. How many spells does Hamid know of level one?
So at level one, Hamid knew two spells, which was Charm Person and Magic Missile.
And that's it. Mm-hmm. Like in that level. So he can cast that, what, five times a day?
Yeah.
But...
So he could cast five Magic Missiles or four Charm Persons and one Magic Missiles.
Right.
And then he can't cast any other level one spells until he slept. Now,
He's got the cantrips.
Yay. He's got as many level zero spells as he could possibly want.
And a cantrip is one that you... Normally, a cantrip's one that you can just do again and again and again and again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they're normally so incredibly minor that it doesn't really break the game that you can do that.
I mean, you do push prestidigitation.
Yeah, so prestidigitation is one of them. Message, detect magic are similar. The one I've been casting quite a lot in some sessions, which is still cantrip and therefore free, is Acid Splash.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can literally do... an infinite amount of acid splash.
What that is, it allows casters who don't really hit people with weapons to have a weapon they can just hit someone with.
Because
a fighter never runs out of sword.
Right. Yes. So it's my kind of equivalent of that. So it's not a very powerful spell, but...
The idea of running out of daggers would probably make... palpitations.
Acid Splash has like the same damage profile as your dagger. So effectively, it's his version of you stabbing someone, but without...
It's him throwing a dagger, but not... being able to throw a dagger
effectively.
But the difference is you can get returning magical daggers that do a whole load of extra effects. He will never get that for Acid Splash.
You also have the option of warning that someone is stabbing them in the back loads.
Fun.
For, as a note, we mentioned it before, for Issue Materials, make sure you can. Even if it's just buying that pouch thing, it's silly to spend a feat on it if you can avoid it, but make sure you can Issue Materials because you will end up at some point with the GM who goes, well, do you have a crocodile talon? No. Well, then you can't do that incredibly minor thing. And there's nothing worse than seeing someone try and source all the stuff properly. Just get it somehow.
We've talked about, because Hamid has it, is combat casting.
Yep.
So most of the time, if you cast a spell and there's an enemy standing next to you, they get to attack you.
Yep.
And your way to mitigate against that is to do something called cast defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And combat casting helps you cast defensively.
Yep.
Only time Hamid tried to use it, he failed and got hit in the face and his spell exploded and that was not great.
I loved it. It was great.
Yeah, I'm sure you loved it.
But then your boss got killed in one hit.
So moving on. We then have...
Stab face. And then the other one got bisected.
So we've got then weapon focus. So for casters, you can sometimes take a weapon focus for things like a ray. And I normally recommend as well improved initiative. If you're playing a caster, because you tend to be squishy in Pathfinder.
The thing is, improved initiative is just amazing for any character.
That's true.
I wouldn't recommend it especially for casters. I'd recommend it for everyone.
Yeah, but then everyone gets improved initiative, including the monsters, because I'm not a fool.
And it's just
it becomes an arms race. Until eventually everyone's got spider sense, and then there's some kind of singularity, and we pop through.
Well, what happens
is
people turn up to a fight, they look at each other, one of them nods, and then accepts the other one.
You do that thing from Hero where you lock eyes and you just play out the fight in your minds and never actually need to raise a weapon and just. I can see it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That would be really cool. Okay, that's the third replacement character.
I mean, to be honest, for that, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so we've got your breakdancing magic Ian.
Undead wizard.
Secret undead.
Yeah, who is? I was going to combine the two into secret undead wizard.
Secret undead breakdancing wizard.
Walking trebuchet, so, yes. I love the idea that for the last dungeon, they'd just be like, well, I can't go in there, but I can just explode everything.
So I'm not a siege mage. I'm literally a walking trebuchet. I'm huge.
No, you don't understand. I just took one spell. What is it? Transmute me into a trebuchet. That's all I do.
It's really specific. That's why I can do it at this lower level.
And you see that flawless segue into recommended spells.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Detect magic. It's Pathfinder. Take detect magic if you cast magic. It lets you know there's magic afoot. Read magic, because magic in this world, it's a bit of a game balancey thing. They deliberately make it so that non-magical characters can't necessarily read magical texts, so that you don't just write a big old scroll of apocalypse from the skies and then give it to your rogue who can sneak in and go, hey, apocalypse from the skies!
The one you told me about, which I wasn't going to take, but is clearly essential, and it's, but we've talked about it on the forums as well, as just how important it is prestidigitation.
Prestidigitation.
Which I almost said that time.
Oh,
almost.
So close. Again, we've mentioned it before, it's the one that lets you do anything as long as it has no real effect.
So, perfect hair. But so I get interested in that no physical effect. I mean, I guess this is
no mechanical effect.
Oh, yeah, right. You can't get bonuses to rolls and it can't do damage. Right. You can't be like, I press digitation to remove the lock from the chandelier so it falls and kills the encounter.
Yeah, that doesn't.
So whereas you could sort of cast on us when we were in the sewer to make us less smelly, but that would affect our sneaking.
It basically comes down to GM's discretion. Yeah. It does, if you lead into prestidigitation, for being such a minor thing, have a massive description, because people try to push their lookers. Yeah. It's basically wish, and they're going, okay, you can only lift things that are less than this weight, less than this size, that do not have this thing, and you don't need all of that. Yeah, it comes down to common sense.
To be honest, everything that Hammond uses it for, which is making himself look well presented, is effectively providing with diplomacy bonuses.
Yeah.
It's for the society that he's around in, always looking well presented will give him long-term diplomacy
bonuses.
It's
very true, but
it's not a mechanical.
But then we get into kind of how do you play culture? And I'm like, I'm an anthropologist, let me help you here.
Exactly.
I like to think of it as speeding things up.
Yep, yep.
Like, you know, he could do the same, anything he can do with prestidigitation, he could do mundanely. It would just take longer, and he'd have to carry more stuff
constantly
around.
Constantly kind of running away, and we're like, oh, so Zolf's trailing a bit behind, but then Hamid is like way behind.
In the toilets, he's just doing his hair. Doing his makeup again.
So, guys, so you smashed through the tables when you found it to this bloodied bathroom as we were in, and just like, there's a mirror, give me a sec.
Let's put it this way, in other games I've heard prestidigitation renamed to cut to,
right?
It's just cut to I'm clean now, or cut to the house is tidy or whatever.
I like to think it also means he can just do, like magicians in our world, like sleight of hand, he can just do any sleight of hand perfectly.
A dove.
Which will make actual like prestidigitators really annoyed, because you rock up with no preparation and years of not doing anything and then go, oh, I can do that, but here's a coin inside this locked safe from India.
Is that a pack of cards in your pocket? Reveal the top 10 cards. They're all the Ace of Spades, except the Ace of Spades has been replaced by my face.
That would be brutal.
Heading into slightly more mechanically ones, I tend to recommend Mage Armor or Shield. It allows you, because as a arcane caster, unless you take a bunch of feats, you don't really wear armor.
Yeah.
It kind of lets you have...
So squishy! And I've also got way, as we've discovered, I have a lot fewer hit points than everyone else in the party. Yeah, so ways to keep myself alive.
It basically gives you okay armor.
I see a trend appearing, which is any spells that you recommend are the not die spells.
Yeah, there's a reason for that. It's because you're squishy.
Like it's an effort to make a new character.
Flight, because it allows you to fly away and not die, and invisibility, because it allows you to go invisible and not die.
Yeah. But you can also cast invisibility on other people.
That's where it gets fun. So suddenly you have an invisible rogue.
Can you imagine an invisible Bertie?
That would never happen.
The thing is that he wouldn't do any good.
Also, just to say, there was a look of genuine pain that went over Alex's face.
Don't let that happen.
I just love the idea.
Please don't let that happen.
Party goal, invisible Bertie, then clone him and make those clones invisible too.
We need just something where, like, Sasha's incapacitated, but you really, really need some sneaking done. And like, you know, maybe Hamid is trapped somewhere, but he can still cast some things. You know, his legs are broken or something.
Just offhand there.
And Bertie's like, oh, I'll do it.
Sneak, sneak, sneak. No one can see me. It's not
not. Oh.
And it's just a clang, 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 and people see these massive footprints kind of coming towards them through the sand. Clang. He's clanging even though it's sand.
It's impressive.
That's how much he clangs.
Well, he's so heavy that he actually compresses it into glass.
I'm going to make it a condition that his armor comes with symbols. After that, let's go into equipment quickly. Recommended items. There tends to be a couple of simple ones, mm-hmm. and then a couple of like real high-end stuff. So one of which is a Rod of Metamagic. You always swear by that, Bryn.
Yes. So
explain it to
us. The Metamagic feats that we were talking about earlier, all the ways you can get your spells better through taking these feats, you can also implant them into rods, which means you don't have to use up a feat slot, and you can just be holding it in your hand, and when you cast the spell, the Metamagic feat is applied to it.
It's like a Wanderer's Staff.
No, so Wanderer's Staff have spells stored in them.
This right, is okay. a modifying.
And this is modifies the spells you cast. Oh. And it's a lot more flexible.
It's
a lot more useful. Yeah.
Although the trade-off is you can have it nicked, it can yeah. break.
You can lose it.
You can only use it 3 times a day.
Yeah, and there's loads of limitations on it.
Yeah. Most metamagic feats mean that the spell is cast at a high level. So right now, it would be useless for me to have any, because I can only cast level 1 spells. Mm-hmm. So if I try to apply a metamagic feat,
it's just now too expensive.
It would be a level 3 spell. I'm like, well, I can't cast a level 3 spell. Mm. Whereas a metamagic rod means you use the spell of its original level. Mm-hmm. And that is what makes them amazing.
At the lower levels, I really recommend take a ranged weapon, like a bow, a crossbow, a sling.
Yeah.
You will run out, and then you will be sat there, and unless you take acid splash or something.
And you can see in the fights we've had that have been successful, Hammett has been far away from the enemies. In the less successful ones, he's been near the enemies.
Sure.
Being sick and looking at his hands and crying.
That's Hammett's opener. It's never failed.
The aristocrat magician. Yeah.
The number of fights where he's vomited in the middle is too high for a campaign this
young. You're a delicate flower.
I have to say, I think it's good because it keeps reminding us that this is actually freaking violent. Like, I really liked that you had what's-his-name saying, wow, there's a lot of people that have died.
You guys are coping really well.
My friends are dead. You guys are coping, and you know, for Zolf and Sasha, it's kind of their job, like their
yeah,
work
yeah.
involved seeing a lot of their colleagues, you know, get hurt,
annihilated.
In pirating and in
Hammett has had to adjust very quickly.
In legitimate sailoring.
In legitimate sailoring, where it's just violent with a rope snapping around, and Sasha's enforced.
I get the impression that Hammett was the kind of guy that used to take insurance on things like pontoon and blackjack and all that jazz, and he's just had to dive in now. He doesn't even have that. Now he's just running around and people are trying to kill him, and it's all a bit much.
He's learning quickly, but yeah, I've tried to get across the idea that he's not completely okay with everything the first time it happens.
Which leads us into, when that happens, potions of cure all the things.
Yes.
You want those, and you also want protective items of +1 for everything that
minor
won't let you
items
die.
To give you more armour, once again.
Just one
resistance.
Magical thing, which is my magic studded leather armour. These studs are magic. Yep.
I'm tempted to make them flash or something. And then, last but not least, before we head into just general questions about the game world, which obviously has some specifics, bit of roleplay advice. The one that I say just to Rose and everyone else is don't make your main shtick be your only thing. Don't make magic your only thing. A spell does not a character make.
Yeah. I'm a sorcerer, so who are you? Well, I'm a sorcerer. Yeah, but what do you do? I sorcery?
I
don't understand the question.
I'm a trebuchet mage. Oh, okay, cool.
But that is all that I am.
What's your hobby? Researching siege tactics.
As a child, I had a terrible experience on the wall.
I was raised by trebuchets and bullied by walls. You've got to dig a little bit deeper than I do magic because magic.
Yeah.
But it's a straightforward stuff.
Yeah, you say it's straightforward, but a lot of people ignore it.
True.
Genius billionaire playboy sorcerer.
And then one other thing, which is a little bit of a nuanced version of that, but I think it's really important, and Bryn's the guy that brought it up, and the more I've thought about it, the more I've thought, yeah, actually, that's really important, is have a relationship with magic if you're going to play a magic character, especially in Pathfinder. It's not just, I do magic. There's a lot more to it than that. I mean, if you're doing a thing that not everyone in the world can do, in fact, very few people can do, in fact, as a sorcerer, a spontaneous caster, Hammett's really in the minority.
And I think it's going to be really interesting as we get further into that and Hammett realises he is more different than he thought.
But that matters. Mm. That's now, congratulations, you're a minority of sorts.
Yeah.
That matters. Engage with it. Deal with it.
Zolf's relationship with Poseidon is fraught.
And, and that's really important to his magic and how it works. And that's been brilliant as well.
Greek gods.
Yeah.
Like my Sasha's relationship with her dagger and Bertie's relationship with himself.
It's a good way of putting it. But it matters, basically, is don't be lazy. Don't be lazy when you're making a character and have an opinion of magic.
It's not even don't be lazy. It's just be interesting.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, it's not like you have to do it to hit some kind of ideal roleplay experience. It's just, you'll have more fun.
Yeah, it gives you more to work with, certainly.
And, you know, and Bertie's done the same thing. You know, the fact that he's stuck falcons on everything and spent, you know, the whole idea of him spending all the money he could on the flashiest, impressivest looking equipment he could.
Relationship.
It's the same idea.
With violent materials.
Yes.
Pretty tight.
Sure. And now we enter into the one where I'm going to be opening a door that I probably should close, which is...
Well, there's one thing I'd like to say before you launch into any questions.
Go for it.
It's just a little bit more about sorcerers. Since Hammond is playing one, we've talked about the idea that he's one day going to turn into a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sorcerers inherit their magical power from a parent of some
kind. Yeah, they do.
And there's a lot of options for that. It's called the sorcerer bloodline. And it's really key to a sorcerer. And there's...
Does anyone pick anything that isn't a dragon?
Oh, all the time.
That secret zombie, he picked an undead source for his magic. So he was...
He's got a zombie mum.
Something like... I think he did actually have a zombie mum or
That's
something
so
like
cool.
that.
Cool!
Yeah. You can have like... There's some vampire in my family.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it just how it
One of the bloodlines is just the arcane bloodline, where one of your ancestors was such a powerful wizard that you've inherited it through
it
the
just,
blood
it just, yeah, rather just went than on through knowledge. Kids.
And there's basically any magical beings, angels and demons are quite cool.
Elementals.
Like there are lots of options, and a lot of them are pretty cool.
As long as you can bang or create progeny from a thing, sorcerers will turn.
Or turn it into something that you can bang and have progeny.
Yeah, that's true.
Like obviously, to my mind, like eventually turning into dragons is very cool. And a lot of them you don't turn into the thing.
Yeah.
So that's a separate issue. And
you don't turn
you gain
into
aspects
zombie.
Of as your power.
Obviously, there are people who choose the one which has the most powerful endpoint. Which is not the dragon one.
No, not at all.
So, to me, it's very cool. And because one of the reasons I chose dragon was actually because of the place Alex has given dragons within the game's story. Because I thought that would create some interesting...
How about that lead into... If you're done, Bryn, sorry.
So, yeah, just to say that there's lots of bloodlines and it has a big effect on the sorcerer. And I think that should be a really big part of the character too.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been very much for Hammond yet.
No.
But again, as he starts to discover more about his sorcererness... The dragonness of it all should come out more.
So,
too.
From backstory, that's a super long play on our part, like
which we may never reach, and Hammond may die before any of this comes to fruition.
Well, that's what role playing is.
Indeed.
It's investing an enormous amount in a character that dies two sessions in and making another one.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
So door open. Go for it. Ask me questions because it's a rare opportunity.
So, what place do dragons have in this world?
As was briefly mentioned in the notes that I gave all of the players, and that by this point we'll have already released the campaign creation metacast,
which has a little more detail.
And
all this stuff is on the website.
And it is all on the website.
But in an obscure place where I don't think any of our fans have reached.
I think I've only seen it because I had to edit it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, what we have here is we've referenced them before. Is the meritocrats. Which,
there's a group of six of them.
Are they dragons?
Yeah, they are.
Ancient, super powerful
dragons. So these
dragons.
Are ancient, super powerful dragons.
Who
this
essentially
all part of
rule
it,
the world.
Who basically, humanity, a long time ago, around sort of, I mean, it's a big parallel, it's kind of ahistorical, around the sort of ancient Rome parallel for modern day, made a real hash of it. Like, a massive hash of it.
Rome didn't fall because of Christianity and a bad
no,
ruling
no.
class. They fell because dragons turned up and burned it.
No, the opposite.
No.
There was a huge magical accident of some sort.
I thought the meritocrats turned up and just wiped them out because they were like, you're not responsible.
Is history unclear on this point?
Yes, it is. Good question, Lydia. Yeah. But long story short, humanity made an enormous hash of it. And a bunch of dragons rocked up and went, okay, no. No. Rolled
you
up the newspaper, smacked them on the nose, and they were like, look, you get to stay, but none of this. Look, you're not ready, just calm down, we'll deal with this. And then they took on responsibilities as sort of heads for various aspects of humanity. So, with Hamid's magical bloodline stuff, it's tying into that pretty heavily. That won't be something that's very common.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's got a bit of meritocrat in him.
Probably. And we don't really know.
Well, it could be a rogue dragon. If there might be other dragons. There might be
rogue dragon.
Ah.
Yeah, like sneak, and it's like his little clackety claws on the stone.
I love the idea of a full-sized dragon just holding knives. Like, it doesn't need them, but it wants them. And that's all that matters.
Two knives, yeah.
So something else that's worth explaining is, I lifted this from 3.5. Again, I don't claim this is the most original thing in the world. I just make sure it's coherent. And that is, some of the gamers here might have been aware of the thread. Any of you heard of the thread or the weave? Mm. So it touches on it in D&D and things like that, and it's
oh, it's the pattern of fate or something.
Yeah,
it's based... the tapestry of existence.
Is it something that spiders do?
No, I don't worry.
No, that actually in some creation myths, you know, giant spider creating the web. That's right. Not, but that would be interesting.
I mean,
actually,
I'm doing it a bit loose and fly by wire, unless you ask something specific. But effectively, the thread is a force that binds us together. It moves through you and blah blah. But effectively, it is. It's
no substitute for a good blaster at your side.
Yeah, I'm glad you got that. It's an energy that helps keep reality together.
Uh-huh.
And people who are casting arcane magic are sort of going tweak and just messing around with it. But that's why there can be completely unexpected consequences if you muck it up.
Mm.
Almost all of learning and almost all of the years of study is learning, no, tweak to the right. Because if you tweak to the left, the entire country will explode. Stop doing that.
Which is probably what happened to the Romans.
Yeah.
And effectively, it's tied up with the nature of reality. Because another thing, I haven't gone into it here and I'm not going to go into it here, is Pathfinder has a lot of stuff to do with the planes. So planes of existence. Think of them as alternate dimensions overlapping one another.
Planes like maths, not planes like meow.
Yes.
There can be planes in the planes, but not necessarily.
Okay.
Like the airplane or the... Like you can have... Heaven would be another plane. Hell would be another plane. Demonic.
Airplane was the wrong one to go to.
Yeah. Airplane's in the airplane.
You do have airplanes. You're like, this doesn't help.
Yeah, so the threads in sort of Pathfinder canon, I think, and D&D sort of tie some of those planes together. And it's basically interacting with reality in a way, but there is a much more depth to it, which I expect Hamid and probably Zolf will end up engaging with over the course of the campaign, so I won't give too much away.
So, as I said, planes are actually a good parallel is the Norse mythology.
Midgard
and Jotunheim.
Gotcha.
And, yeah.
I don't understand enough about magic to ask more questions.
Bridget, do you have any questions?
Go for it. We had a lot of discussions actually ahead of time, which helped clear some stuff
up. To me, the most interesting aspect is I want Hamid to explore this in character, is what is a sorcerer and what does this world know about sorcerers? Because he, like I said, he in character has not quite realised he isn't a wizard.
Like, it's no spoiler to bring you up. No one's used that word once.
Yeah, in character, the word sorcerer has not been uttered.
But he seems to have got over the whole like hands into claws thing.
Well, temporarily.
Yeah. Has he?
I think that's more because things have been instantly trying to kill him.
Lots of things have happened to him.
He hasn't had to turn his hands into claws again.
We've internalised a lot of
things.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, when the studies are down, like, I mean...
some metacasts will just be in-character therapy sessions.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff we're not dealing with.
Yeah, like, on that train, I don't know when this will be released, but there was recently a journey in
spoilers, we got on a train at some point.
There was a point...
Oh, you've ruined it for everyone. Podcast over.
We got to sit down quietly for a very short period of time and actually quite enjoyed it. Like, you know, maybe at that point all of the fear should have come out, and we should, if we were being realistic, have just started weeping and shaking.
I don't know, I think I'm still
actually, that is a good point, is bringing up something, is the industrialization of magic. That occurs to me, is in this world, I've mentioned it before, is I like worlds where, okay, magic's a thing. Okay, here's my disbelief. I've used my disbelief on that. Okay, but if magic's a world, some guy has gone, I'm not going to rule the world, but I can use magic to make really, really fast carts, like really fast carts, and suddenly you can make a living out
and
of that.
And so things like the trains and the airships, a lot of them run on magic rather than running on science.
Because you don't need steam power.
No.
You don't need to develop...
Why bother? It's steam power's really, really, really dangerous and expensive and complicated. Why not just bend this elemental to your will and it does what it's told?
It now makes sense now that you said how hard it is to do magic, because otherwise you don't want a world where everything is easy and
exactly.
Energy is just super easy. But if you need to spend decades of your life investing in working out how to do these spells, and each person can only do like one spell like that. So you've got...
They're a specialist.
You've got a whole load of... Instead of having train drivers with unions, instead the people that are running these things, there's like, you know, 100 really high level electric wizards.
Exactly.
That one after another cast the spell to charge.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay, I get it. Now it makes sense.
Then there's a couple of depressing facts which have come to my attention after that, which is, one, you dedicate, say, 10 years of your life learning as hard as you can to make a little thing that makes your dinner appear from the table over there to the table over here instead of a waiter. Yeah, someone spent 10 years of their life dedicating themselves to learning just how to do that.
But they probably make quite a lot of money out of it.
Well, that's the deal.
So your return on investment is pretty good, and also you can tap a table and your dinner turns up. So
it's like being something like an architect. Or a vet.
It's a long-term investment.
These are things where they take, I'm thinking specifically ones where they've got a 7+ year training period. Yeah. And then at the end of that, that's where you get your qualification. Mm-hmm. And then you can go out and make a decent amount of money.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, the way that you can get by is certainly with the arcane and wizards. Mm. Sorcerers are different in any campaign, but in this one as well. They're basically academics. Mm. They're people who decided to be an academic.
Computer coders, really.
Sort of.
Or research scientists who can then go into industry and make lots of money by selling what they've invented.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is, for some people, this is unglamorous. They want boom, boom. But ultimately, I always say that a world should be coherent. And part of that is, people can do some big stuff. How does that tie in? Oh, right. Most of the stuff that they can do, they've spent their entire life doing, it's the only thing that they can do, because it's the versatility is what I like, is in these games, player characters should be in some ways more versatile than the average person. There are merchant NPCs, and they're good at selling stuff, but that's pretty much their thing, because they dedicate themselves. The reason the player character is exceptional is that, when it comes to Hammond and Magic, is that he's not a guy who's specialised in making different types of toothpick that are magic.
One thing that I really like about a lot of the Pelgrane RPGs, like Trail of Cthulhu and 13th Age, because it asks you why you're a PC. A lot of games just kind of gloss over that and say, you're a PC because you're a PC. Mm. But they go, no, why are you different from everybody else? Why are you doing the things? Why don't you just live a normal life and have a family? Why is this so horrible and why are you putting up with it?
And that, in this game world, matters in the sense of, why aren't you choosing to be a bread magician? Yeah. There's good money in bread magic and stuff like that. And
disappointed parents saying, oh, you should have gone into bread, not into mentoring malarkey.
there's no future in trains. It's all about bread.
That's why I have to get famous. Yeah. So my parents will be impressed.
Because, of course, validation, that's all everyone
needs.
Wait,
is this actually a plot point? Yeah. Is this a spoiler?
Probably.
Because I don't actually know anything about your parents. You were very deliberately harsh.
I mean, I think we can infer from the fact he never mentioned his
parents. That they were bread.
They were bread.
Neither,
like, Zolf and Sasha don't really mention their parents. That's because for their own reasons.
Well, it's almost like everyone has complicated and hidden backstories.
If only there was a way to draw that out over an extended period of time. It's also entertaining to listen to.
I mean, to be honest, if we just
quite interested in his
heritage. Spoilers, almost scored.
There you go. Yeah. Right, I think we're going to close
there. We should wrap it up. Yeah.
We've had a pretty long one there, but we've covered a lot of stuff. And everyone, if there were questions that you wanted answered that these guys didn't ask, complain. Write emails, tell them how much you hate them.
Go on the forum, tweet.
Go mental, just blame them. I gave them the chance to ask all of the questions that you want to know, and instead, we got onto bread magic. That's their fault, it's not mine.
If people send us enough questions, we can compile them all and do a single metacast, which is all these questions.
Which is just a mailbag.
Scream them at Alex. We'll tie him down. Scream. We'll get James to do it.
All of your formats involve torture.
Get in touch.
Yep, and we look forward to being here again next week.
Yay, bye.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by RustyQuill.com and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial International License. Today's episode was recorded and produced by Alexander J. Newell. To comment on episodes, make donations, and view links, images, videos, and show notes, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Tweet us on Twitter at @TheRustyQuill, or email us at mail@rustyquill.com. Thanks for listening. Basically converting stuff, so converting something from one thing to another thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot
fear
of overlap.
Fear into anger.
Anger into hate.
Hate into
chocolate
suffering,
cake.
Suffering, or maybe just, suffering. You know. It's like you guys don't even know your Jedi code.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
God, you're such a Padawan. So.
Oh, literally, we'd be also, the thing no, you below. Be we'd be youngling.
You'd be Sith.
We'd be younglings.
No, not Jedica, Padawans. No, I got that wrong. I got myself mixed up.
Oh, I'd be Sith.
Terrible.
Because Padawans would know some things.
They're told.
So we're
I feel like we accidentally got lost in the wrong IP again. We keep doing that.
I mean, sorry, fantasy. Woo!
Let's stop talking about Jedi.
So.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola, and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe period Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun. And see you later.